Hello, everybody. I'm Michael Monaco.
And I'm Bobby Salvis, and we are the Hazmat Guys, bringing you knowledge and insight to make your job a little bit easier and safer.
Let's take a minute to hear about today's sponsors.
Hey, Mike, let me ask you, have you ever heard about the bar method?
Have not, but it sure sounds like fun. What does it mean?
Well, probably not what you think it stands for, but what they mean is blot, apply, and remove. It's the new way to remember the steps to conduct hybrid decon.
Okay, I'm listening.
Well, with the threats continuing to evolve, our SOPs do as well. And First Line Technology introduced us the BAR method. It's backed by science and real-world application. This method of blot, apply, and remove is faster, safer, and more effective method to decon.
Is it going to work for both wet and dry?
Well, yeah, absolutely. The methodology forces you to consider the who, what, when, and where before determining what materials you will be used to carry out the necessary actions. It helps you to tailor your decon to the threats you're facing.
This could be exactly the thing I need to train my team on. How can I get more info?
Well, First Line's EDS kit has everything you need to conduct a hybrid decon for large or small missions. To learn about the kit and how to apply this BAR method, visit www.firstlinetech.com/EDS. You know, when an environmental emergency occurs, who do you call to assist with managing your liability? First Call Environmental maintains 40-hour OSHA-trained personnel and specialized response equipment in over 20 locations throughout the eastern United States. From minor petroleum releases to overturned tankers, First Call is ready to respond 24/7. Call today and learn how the First Call difference can protect your company. Call 1-800-646-1290.
Let's get to the show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Hazmat Guys. I'm Bobby Salveson. I'm here with Mike. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Bobby.
Wow. It's just, it's moving along.
What exactly is moving along?
Life? I don't know.
Please, if you've got something moving along, let me know, because I kind of feel like life's at a standstill.
I don't know. I just, you know what? I think I've been going in, and I'm not an anti-vaxxer or anything like that, but I've been honestly going into stores with no mask or anything on, and I've been getting very, very little resistance. And
nothing.
And you know what? I'm doing it the right way. My state says that, you know, once you're double vaccinated, you're basically done.
Yep.
Stores can do what they want, but I have yet to find a store that absolutely refused. And if they do, I have no problem putting it on.
I don't. I keep it with me. And if I'm around a lot of people that have their masks on, and especially if they're like old, I'm like, all right, you know, like I'll make them feel comfortable. I'll throw my mask on. I really don't have an issue either way,
No. But
it is really nice to not have the mask. I mean, all right, I've had to start brushing my teeth again and like trimming my nose hairs, all like the stuff that you did beforehand, I now have to do.
Yeah.
But I got to say, it's, you know, it's good.
Yeah, it's good. So with that that segue,
conferences.
The Massachusetts conferences. Yeah, the Massachusetts conference coming up. If you haven't got your tickets, they are doing the in-house, in-person, my bad, conference. And so go and check that one out. This is probably going to be the last one at the Plymouth Pebble.
Yeah, I actually thought they had already moved from the Pebble. I guess not, huh?
No, it's coming to a theater near you, but it's, I know where the new location is, but I don't think I can give it out yet because they haven't secured things. So.
Right, right. Is it the same one that they were planning for last year?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah.
Very, so they went back to the X for a little while.
Yes. That's all right.
All right, hey, listen, sometimes it happens.
So, other than that, we got some stuff going on behind the scenes that we're going to be releasing at an even number is the plan, a nice even number for us. And we'll see when we get there, where we are. But I think you guys will all be pretty happy with what we're going to do. And once again, if you haven't checked us out on YouTube, we are running these probably for the last 10 episodes in a video additional format where we can explain things graphically.
Yes.
And you can see our smiling faces if you want.
Yes.
But And this we're will naked. Continue. And,
no. So you have that additional plus.
Yeah, well. No. So, eerie, dramatic instructions for today's show.
Yes. Yeah, my directions were do not open up the guidelines. We like to put together a guideline just so I am severely ADHD. So if I do not have a guideline, we will like be talking about squirrels and deer and something crazy. So yes. I always kind of have a guideline set up, and I told Bob, you're not allowed to open it up yet. So, Bob.
Yes.
Without too much detail.
Okay.
Do a quick walkthrough of a decon process, any decon process.
Okay. I'm just fictionalizing a scenario in my head. Something where we're doing legit decon, right?
Legit. Not like just a boot wash. You know what? We had that shirt incident a long time ago.
Yes.
Let's go through that decon. Go through how you would have done that decon. Nothing crazy, not specific details. It could be pretty general.
Okay. I probably would have stayed away from the water at the scene. Just for everybody's information, we had sulfuric acid. It was on a guy's chest area, and we used a light water source to kind of dilute out to effect.
Right.
And what we ended up doing
sticking with the traditional car wash method that we had all been taught. Yes.
Right. And basically what we did was we diluted the sulfuric acid and drove it through the zipper and seam, and we created a bigger problem. So if I were to do that and having that chunky, thick sulfuric acid, I probably would have opted with a more of a dry decon-esque type thing where I could have gone in there with some high-grade Bounty paper towels and taken the bulk of it off. And therefore, if I applied the water in limited quantities, I probably would have been a little more successful in not driving it through.
Okay. So you wipe it down and we don and doff them and we're good.
Yeah, but then comes part two, which is take a shower, wash your hands, wash your face, which is often overlooked.
And then comes part three that I can tell you as almost a matter of fact, I have never actually truly done. This started a while ago in my head, and it's been kind of building and working, and it's been bothering me. And like so many things that bother me, I dive into the laws and the regulations, and I try to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And all right, so I'll start with this. You guys all know that we're switching to a dryer decon method, a wipe method. So as a result, we're updating all of our decon cards, and you know, they're kind of a picture type of thing, start to finish. And I'm like, you know, there's something that's really been bothering me about these cards and about how we have been teaching decon within the past 5 years. Because I remember learning this in tech school when I first was doing this 15 freaking years ago. And that is to confirm decon method has worked. And I always just kind of was like, all right, yeah, well, that's like a smart thing to do. Like, you want to make sure you did it right. It is the law. It is the law to check the effectiveness of decon post-decontamination.
When was that law written?
I don't know when the law was written, but it is in OSHA.
Because, and, I mean, there's laws that, like, you can't chew bubblegum while you're walking your horse.
Maybe. I don't disagree with you, but think about this.
Okay.
Think about that shirt. And the reason I brought the shirt incident up is because it's an interesting perspective, right? Like, let's say he didn't have the shirt on underneath. Let's say he got burnt on his chest and his abdomen. Who's responsible for that? Because at some point, we violated OSHA in not checking the effectiveness of that decon. And I didn't know that this even existed until I was flipping through. Listen, you can always learn something new all the time. I was flipping through a very basic tech book, the IFSTA book that we sit in the conference room at work, and I was flipping through pages, and I came across this thing on Decon, and it said OSHA requires a analysis of the effectiveness of Decon. And I was like, OSHA? Like, this isn't like... So I started Googling it. And sure enough, Bob, if you open up the document, this is the excerpt from OSHA. Now, it is not part of 1910.120. It is an addendum. It is additional information. It has its own section called Decon, and it's actually like a 10 to 15 page document. I took the excerpt out for testing for effectiveness of Decon. I will also note, and I'm not going to go into the story, but Bob knows the story, and a few of you out there know the story. In that document, it also specifically says you are never to remove equipment or personnel out of a contaminated zone without prior decontamination and effectiveness. So a confirmation on another law that I know was broken at some point in my career, and Bob knows exactly what I'm talking about. But with that being said, testing for the effectiveness of Decon is actually an OSHA regulation. So it's not just something willy-nilly. And if you're a hazmat branch supervisor or you're an officer, this is something that you really need to be aware of, because that responsibility for not carrying out, you know, if somebody gets hurt, right? Listen, nothing's going to happen until somebody gets hurt. But when somebody gets hurt, where was your responsibility in following OSHA to make sure you're testing for the effectiveness of the Decon?
Okay.
Go with your thoughts.
I have a few thoughts on this. And if you're watching the video, you're going to see right now, while Mike's been talking, the wording is up there. But I think for fairness,
we should read the wording.
I'm going to read it out.
Yeah. We could take back and forth paragraphs. It's not long. It's like half a page.
Yes. So it's titled Testing for the Effectiveness of Decontamination. It says decontamination methods may vary in their effectiveness of removing different substances. The effectiveness of any decontamination method should be assessed at the beginning of a program and periodically throughout the lifetime of a program. Now, I'm assuming they're saying the program is your educational sphere.
Well, I think, okay, so I believe...
Not an incident.
It's both, right? Because the program is your site safety. Because in this document that I only pulled an excerpt from,
right,
they use program and they use site safety objectives, like in the same wording. So I believe, because remember, this is written for both industry and first responders. So if I had a program and I was in industry, that would be part of my program. For us, the program is the incident. So we come up with, like, you know, a site safety plan. We come up with an incident action plan. All that stuff is part of what they, I believe, are deeming the program. Now, I'm not a lawyer. If there's somebody out there that can better describe it, feel free. But that's what I got out of the entire document.
Okay, continuing on. If contaminated materials are not being removed or are penetrating the protective clothing, the decontamination program must be revised. The following methods may be useful in assessing the effectiveness of your decontamination.
Right. So
number one.
Now we jump into, like, what is by OSHA an acceptable method of making sure the decon is there? And I thought this was pretty cool because they give you four different ways.
Right. Okay, so the first one is visual observation. There is no reliable test to immediately determine how effective decontamination is. In some cases, effectiveness can be estimated by visual observation. First, in natural light, discolorations, stains, corrosive effects, visible dirt, or alterations in clothing fabric may indicate that contaminants have not been removed. However, not all contaminants leave visible traces. Many contaminants can permeate clothing and are not easily observed. Okay, I can understand. Natural light. Now they say ultraviolet light. Certain contaminants, such as polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, which are going to be our, like, gasolines, diesels, blah, blah, blahs, which are common in many refined oils and solvent wastes, fluoresce and can be visually detected when exposed to ultraviolet light. Ultraviolet light can be used to observe contamination of skin, clothing, and equipment. However, certain areas of the skin may fluoresce naturally, thereby introducing an uncertainty to the test. In addition, use of ultraviolet lights can increase the risk of skin cancer and eye damage. Well, I don't think it's that
yeah,
long.
Hey, but, you're good with this, but you're going to die of cancer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Therefore, a qualified health professional should assess the benefits and risks associated with ultraviolet light prior to its use at a waste site. Okay. So visual is good. Wipe
visual
sampling.
Is good. Yep.
Wipe testing provides after-the-fact information on the effectiveness of decontamination. In this procedure, a dry or wet cloth, glass, fiber, filter, paper, or swab is wiped over the surface of a potentially contaminated object, and then analyzed in a laboratory. Both the inner and outer surfaces of PPE should be tested. Skin may be also tested using wipe samples.
Now,
I like that one.
This is where, this is where I started going, well, wait a second, like, if I had a pH paper and I wiped it on somebody's clothes after they got out of gear, right? I'm not sending that to a lab, but I'm kind of confirming it. So that paragraph threw me off just a little bit. But again, I think it's still in the same vein of it's a method of testing, right? We're going to do like a colorimetric type testing. I could wipe a sample and then throw it on my 908. I could wipe a sample
or IMS.
Right, IMS. Anything Whatever. Along those lines.
Okay, third one, cleaning solutions analysis. Another way to test the effectiveness of decontamination procedures is to analyze for contaminants left in the cleaning solution. Elevated levels of contaminants in the final rinse solution may suggest an additional cleaning and rinsing are needed. Now, that one I'm kind of out on because I don't know anybody that separates the first wash from the second wash from the third wash from the
I can't even imagine how we would end up doing that.
And I don't the only think it's thing logistically.
The only thing I could think of is maybe in like an asbestos abatement job where they're going through multiple showers. Maybe that would, but I can't imagine us now. However, now with that being said, if you were doing like a three pool method and the last one, it was still coming up as acidic or basic, depending on the compound that you were on. That may give you an indication that you're not getting it all off.
But that means you're only doing one guy. Once you put the second guy in there, you got to empty, clean, sterilize, sanitize the whole thing.
You could smash it. If it's a third pool, you could hit it for each guy that goes through. Okay, this water's clean. So now I know the next guy coming in, that water's going to be, you know, if it's dirty, it's from him.
That's a tough one.
It is a tough one.
You know, when you're out there facing the unknown, you want the MX908 in your toolkit. Now, it's packed with the sensitivity and selectivity of high-pressure mass spectrometry. This is a detection device that fits right in your hands. You can detect and identify chemical targets from street drugs to explosives and ticks to chemical warfare agents, including Novichoks, all with the same tool. The MX908 can detect and identify threats in any state and is now the only field tool available for real-time aerosol analysis. The MX908 gives you the rapid, actionable intelligence you need to make decisions faster and ensure the safety of everybody involved. To get more information about the MX908, including technical papers, video demos, and target lists, go to info.908devices.com/hazmat, and then hazmat is all in one word. With the MX908, you get real-time detection of real-time threats. Check it out at info.908devices.com/hazmat. And the fourth and final is testing for permeation. This is the testing for the presence of permeated chemical contaminants. Requires that the pieces of PPE, or protective garments, be sent to a laboratory for analysis.
Yeah, I can't see us doing that either because we throw away all of our PPE.
Yeah, it just goes in a bag. It's gone. Yeah. It goes right in the landfill.
If you're keeping your PPE to reuse it, like if your chief is like, no, we're going to keep that and reuse it, nod your head, put it in a plastic bag, throw it away when you get to the firehouse.
Yeah, or ruin it. Tear it. Rip it.
Yeah, tear it. So there's always a hole in it.
All right.
But so I thought this was because I don't feel like a lot of places talk about this, and it makes it does make sense to a degree, right? Like, if I've got gasoline, if I'm dealing with gasoline, why not just hit me with the PID after I've gone through my decon? Just make sure I've got nothing on my clothes, nothing on my skin. Something as
maybe
simple
I missed
as that.
It, but I don't see anything about metering.
No, there is. You're right. There is nothing here. There is nothing here on metering. I think they're giving examples of things that are acceptable.
Okay.
But I don't think they're saying, like, these are the only guidelines.
All right.
I think it's just, hey, here's four examples of testing for effectiveness of decon.
I'm totally riffing on this, but I am, and we didn't set this up. I don't know how Mike stands on the metering thing. I know it is something to dig in on, and it can be dug in on. But I will stand firm on not needing to meter post decon. I still think we're doing it right. And I'll tell you why. Okay. You know what? Let me give you the A-B comparison of what we were doing, right?
Okay,
so
go ahead.
I think the vast majority of the country is still doing this car wash type method. And yes. And it does have viability for, I don't want to say, it's quick,
us,
it's simple.
It's taken us this far from 1980s to present day.
Yeah.
But it's not the best.
It's not. It's dated, and I'll give you the reasons why. When you do the car wash method, there's multiple problems with it because I'm transferring whatever's on member A to member B to member C. That's point one. And so if member C was relatively lightly contaminated, he is now heavily contaminated because the first guy through, if I triage them properly, is contaminated. Plus, when we get them out of that first pool, we typically take a meter reading and we say, he's still dirty, fold him back in the line. We're using up air, etc. And so we were focusing on how contaminated his knee was, where I don't care how his knee is. Right? It doesn't move
right.
The ball.
But I do care after he gets out of the suit. See, my thought process is, you're right. For what we're doing, I really don't give a rat's ass if it's all over him when he's doffing. But I do want to make sure, especially since we're not any more concerned about that huge patch on the knee, right, is that there's nothing on him when he gets out of the clothing.
Right. Okay. So you're going to be getting into gear with some type of clothing, whether it be spandex or the latest trends in hipster garb that you may have at your disposal, and you're going to be going into suit. And again, to make sure everybody's on the same page, because I think this is one of the most easily overlooked things in PPE decon specifically, is that there is a huge amount of people that think when they get in a suit and they go take care of that badass chemical and you come out and you get the best decon known to man, that you are clean. You are absolutely positively not clean.
Not clean. Even if nothing, even if there's no tear, even if there's no rip, even if nothing gets through the zipper,
nothing. You are
material
guaranteed.
Material is still going through the suit.
Yep. It is designed to do it, and it's more than I can explain now, but if you think that you're clean, you're a fool. All right. I'm going to say it just like that. So when you come out, the next step is, now you're like, holy crap, I am dirty. Wash your hands, wash your face. Why? Because those are probably the most too exposed because you're handling things. And then you are to strip off whatever you have. And like we're told, take off the garment, you take off 90% of the problem, right? So I've taken off the outer hard shell, my exoskeleton, if you would. And now I have my soft undergarments, my naughties. And, and now I take those things off. And I think this is where one of those arguments where you can say, this is why we should be wearing long pants and long sleeve shirts, because that additional removal takes more percentage of that contaminant off. And now I just get to the whole shower, because it becomes that whole thing of dose over time equals effect.
Right.
And so if I can minimize the dose by AKA stripping and minimize my time by getting a shower quickly, my effect is much lower.
Yeah. I do not disagree with you in any way, shape, or form, but just through my normal instructor observations, it is amazing if I were to cover somebody in the glow light and had the glow germ and had them doff, I guarantee you there would be shit all over them.
Guys, if you don't know what that is, glow germ, you can buy it on Amazon or whatever. And it is a 5 or 6 piece kit that comes with a UV. It's a very specific UV. It's like 300 nanometers UV. And it comes in a liquid that's like VX. It comes in a liquid that's like, there's a couple of different viscosities and there's some powders that are like fentanyl.
Right.
So what you do is you sprinkle it on the guy to go into decon. And when they do the whole, oh, wash the guy, wash the guy, wash the guy, that's when you flip on this light and look at the ground, look at the pool, look at the brush, look at the people that are doing it. You'll be like, oh,
it's everywhere.
You're going to be like, oh my God.
It's everywhere.
And that's why this is what we call the buy-in where we work, is that we show you how bad it is because we don't tell them what we're doing. And then when they do the normal wash that they think is correct.
Let's like, take the most comfortable thing about hazmat that everybody loves and embraces and shake it and be like, you've been doing it wrong. You're going to die.
It's overwhelming. It looks like a crime scene when you're done. It's just, and it's all over the guy. I mean, it was just on his shoulder. Now it's on his knees. It's in the zippers. It's up on his face. It's on this guy's face. He right. shook his hand of his friend and this, and now it's in the command post. It's incredible.
It gets everywhere.
So if I were to do my, again, and I'm not advocating for dry decon, although I think it is absolutely the way to go, is if I remove that bulky crap off of him in the first pool, we'll just say it is like a ring, a pool. I take all that crap off him, and I understand there is still product in the matrix of the suit, right? It has driven into the suit itself. It's in that suit. Some of it's gone through, but I've taken everything on the outside out. I can't suck it from the suit out.
Right.
Okay.
The goal is hopefully keep it trapped in the suit.
It's trapped, and I'm good with that because he's going to be moving through this line in maybe a minute, 2 minutes. When I unzip him and I take this turtle shell off, I understand he's still going to have some on his pants and coat. That's where I would say take off your clothes, get in the shower. Now here's where I'm going to kind of back up to where Mike is I don't have a problem when the guy comes out of the shower of me saying, give me your hands. Let me see your knees.
Right.
At that level, because that's where I expect him to be clean. If he's not, we have a dramatic issue.
I totally agree. You know what? That I totally agree with. But the problem is on scene for us, right? Like, so yeah, showers and stuff with industry, totally get it. But how many times have you been able to shower on scene?
Zero.
Zero. How many times do you get back in the rig, back in the truck, or even like when we're talking about decon, we're not even just talking about personnel. We're talking about the equipment as well.
Well, I don't understand why you can't have, it's going to be a brisk shower, but I would say nationally, you're going to have a 55 degree shower because the water comes out of the degree, you know, the ground in the United States and actually around the world, it doesn't change anywhere, is 55 degrees ish.
Right. Right. But what I'm saying is the words that you said was, after the shower is when I expect them to be clean.
Yeah.
But yet we're getting into apparatus. Oh. We're getting into, you know, we're interacting in the cold zone and we don't know for sure if we're clean because we haven't even accomplished the step that we are expected to be clean.
Okay. So then I would, and again, I'm kind of formulating this plan. I'm building this plan as I fly.
Yeah. Listen, I'm totally and pulling this out of my ass and talking about it as we go along.
I would still say you're compliant if you do my methodology post shower. Now, if I come out and I was able to change my clothes or whatever, there's nothing saying, or I don't think there's anything saying that I can't just grab a meter and test pre-shower. And if I come up clean, do I need to take a shower?
Absolutely. I mean, think of that acid run, right? If they had just taken a pH paper and just kind of rubbed it around real quick on the wet spots, right? Because he took his stuff off and he was soaked, but it was also a 99 degree day
in sweat,
you know, in the Northeast where there's, you know, 140% humidity in the normal air. It could have just been sweat, but a quick wipe of pH paper in those visibly wet spots would have indicated that there was, in fact, some kind of a breach and that the decon was ineffective.
I completely subscribe. I don't have an issue with that. I just don't subscribe that it should be done after the first pool.
No, I don't think it should be. No, I agree with you. I think it should be done at
a second pool.
I think it should be done at a point in which that personnel is going to be interacting with the cold zone. Like the moment that they turn around, they go, okay, you are no longer part of the warm zone. You are now part of the cold zone. In order to do that, there should be some kind of, and I'm not even saying like an official test, but the thought process should be there, right? Like, I do a chlorine run. I'm not going to monitor the guy. It's chlorine gas, right? Like, it's not going to be there. I guess I could, but at least the thought was there. Hey, is there a probability that this person's been contaminated?
Yes. Yeah. What you said is probably the most succinct, is that it's the distance between, or the line between secondary pool, or AKA I dropped my suit, which is probably going to take a substantial portion of you, and now I'm in my street clothes or my ensemble, whatever you want to call it. And now we can monitor to see if it's worth us deconning further, like going to the shower or not.
Right.
Or we can move it a little bit further back and go post shower. I do agree that you have to prove it.
Yeah.
Like you should be proving it out. Like we don't personally do post entry medicals.
Right.
But that's a show for another day of why we don't do it. Actually, that's a very good idea for a show.
That is a good idea. Actually, we don't do the pre-entry. Well,
pre-entry post, or post-entry.
Yeah, I mean, I've always done a post after being in a level A, but like I haven't ever done it any time afterwards.
I'm writing it down, crap, because that's a good one.
We're at 28 minutes. There was a whole second section to this show. Okay. That had nothing to do with decon. It'll be the next episode. I didn't think we were going to talk about this for more than 15 minutes.
I mean this, like, you know, we can always help you out. We took a system that was okay, and because of our pervasive, maniacal, mechanistic ways, and I'm not saying just me and Mike, but we were definitely, you know, part of this whole thing. The team took it apart, reassembled it. I mean, and we've been tweaking and polishing and twisting and tweaking. We have, I would say it's a new product.
Absolutely.
It's a new
thought process. It's a new product. It's a new way of thinking. It's a new, it's
everything. It's like Gen 60.
Yeah. Everything about it is well thought out and laid out, because you got 15 people like me and you who are going to sit there and go,
don't
you think we should be monitoring for something afterward? You know, like, and it's like, oh, but, you know, and literally picking apart, like, well, should they grab the SCBA with their right hand? When do we take the SCBA off? Where do we put it? Like, these are the intense processes that are constantly going through this program that we've had. And really, the fire got lit under everybody's ass after that shirt incident.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, listen, if you guys want more information or have us come out and show the wares, we could definitely hook you guys up and show you guys how this whole system works. I would be absolutely floored if you guys say, yeah, I think we're going to stick with the wet decon.
Yeah. Yeah. The greatest thing that I've ever heard somebody describe it as, and I say it all the time, is let's say you're cooking in the firehouse. Let's say you're cooking at home and you drop a chicken cutlet on your countertop. You're going to pick it up and you're going to run outside. You're going to grab the hose and you're going to spray down your whole countertop with the hose, right? That's how you would clean up that raw chicken junk, right? If that doesn't make any sense to you, if you think that is the stupidest idea in the world, you would be right, and you need to change how you do your decon. You're going to take up less space. You're going to be more efficient. You're going to be safer. It's going to be easier for everybody. Trust me. It's a phenomenal system.
We'll leave you with this. I saw a report that the average decon for two members takes 35 gallons of gray water. We currently do six guys with a half a gallon.
I would say if you told me we went through half a gallon of water,
yeah,
like I would be shocked. I would have thought it would be in the ounces.
Yeah, and think about this. You're not bringing them through the entire building. You're doing it right at the footprint.
Right there.
So much, much more gooder way of doing it.
Yeah. I would love to go around and show this to people. We talk about it all the time. It's really, I promise you, within the next 10 years, it'll be a standard. Well, that wraps up another episode of the Hazmat Guys.
You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and our YouTube channel at The Hazmat Guys, and take a moment to call our comment hotline at 843-628-1484.
And we are always looking forward to your feedback about information or interesting incidents that you are a part of, so send us a note at feedback@thehazmatguys.com.
Remember, guys, don't just get on the job, get into the job.